Back we are with the Fastest Known Podcast. This is episode 92. In case you're wondering, we skipped last week. In this time of physical distancing and social intimacy, it's good to be talking with everybody. I really appreciate the community that we have around this podcast. And we're back with an exciting new FKT coming on the Long Trail in Vermont, set by Joe Stringbean McConaughey. Welcome, Stringbean.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Buzz.
Well, you've been on before. You were back in episode 22. That was like 2 years ago when you set the FKT on the Appalachian Trail. Oh, my gosh. That was 45 days. Oh, my gosh. And you also had an FKT on the Pacific Crest Trail. So you're the long trail guy, no pun intended. And now you just went 6 minutes under 5 days on the long trail in Vermont. So congratulations.
Thank you very much, Buzz. Thank you.
Well, you've got a lot going on. So you've been living, I believe, in the East Coast for 10 years. Now you and your wife just moved to Seattle. You got out of the East and you've kind of changed the shape of things. So before we get into the long trail, just catch us up here. What's going on?
Yeah, life's been moving fast for a soon-to-be 29-year-old. it's a kind of weird year with everything going on. But my wife, Katie, she's going back to school to become a registered dietitian. And we've talked for a while now, after being in Boston for 10 years, about trying to be closer to mountains, about trying to, you know, maybe having a less city-based lifestyle and something that aligns a little bit more with our interest in the outdoors. You know, we were spending 2 to 3 weekends every summer driving up to the White Mountains in New Hampshire, which, you know, that 3-hour drive can certainly add up. So hopefully, you know, being in Seattle, we just finished our road trip / move yesterday. Will be a nice change of scenery. Man, it's been crazy. Like end of May, we left our apartment and it's now June 24th, I think. And so I spent, you know, a few weeks social distancing to make sure that I could even have the opportunity to do the long trail, with the, you know, different state orders in Vermont due to COVID. And then once I got the green light on that, ran the long trail. Once I finished the long trail, we immediately packed up and got in a car and drove across country. So life's been moving fast. And in addition to that, I'm also looking at some job changes where I'm working full time as a running coach, so ultra running coach mostly, and also working with Andrew Skirka on his online planning course and guided trip curriculum.
Wow. Okay. So this podcast will be longer than its normal 30 or 40 minutes because we got a lot to talk about. And of course, I could ask you about sleep deprivation, which you obviously are extremely good at.
Yeah. What was harder, the cross country? Jumping in a car and driving as fast as you can across the country or running the long trail?
Well,
my long trail time won, by the way.
Okay. All right. And good for you for working for Andrew Skirka. He's been a guest on the podcast a couple times and you are extremely credible for that position. By the way, Andrew Skirka Adventures, you can Google that. He leads guided trips and you are an assistant guide on those guided trips. Wow. All-star class there. Flying Brian is one of his assistant guys as well. I've been a guide a couple times too. So good for you. And you're also working behind the scenes, managing his programs, I think. So nice. You're making a good transition here.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those kind of weird life moments where it's, you know, I love being in the outdoors and the outdoor industry and running and ultra running. And hopefully there's a way to make all those things work out, but only time will tell.
Right. Time indeed. Well, that's one of our topics here. And this is the first big trail it is, to come down this year with the pandemic. You know, the Grand Canyon shuts down, no rim to rim to rim. And the Appalachian Trail Conservancy said, don't do it. Don't do a through hike. PCT said the same thing. They weren't issuing permits in the JMT. So it's been interesting in FKT land. People can go on the website and there's been a lot of stuff coming. You cannot believe we're getting buried with things. And it's mainly people creating their own adventure, right? Because presumably they're respecting the COVID protocols. So they're doing things fairly local and creating their own adventure and very interesting FKTs and very interesting routes, particularly from overseas. Western Europe has been popular, but yours I'm not sure if you've seen that, but yeah, Germany, Sweden in particular have been going bonkers. And so go to the website and see what's coming in, because if someone ever wants to take a trip, you just go on the website and there's your bucket list, right? Wherever you want to go, there's the best routes in that area. But yours is the first of the classic trails. And you were preceded by this all-star cast. You know, JB, Jonathan Basham, still has the supported record before him, Cave Dog, Ted Kaiser. And then you bested Jeff Garmir's time for unsupported or self-supported by 1 day. So that's a lot. You know, he squeaked under 6 days and you squeaked under 5 days. So you took a chunk off of that. And of course, Nikki Kimball for the women and Eliska Godeski was one of our FKT of the Year winners. Before them, Jennifer Farr Davis. So the long trail, this is competitive. This is not low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, when I look at FKTs, you know, it's sort of like the cream of the crop, of course, are the, you know, Pacific Crest Trail, Appalachian Trail. But the mid-length FKTs, like the Colorado Trail, the Long Trail, the JMT, those are really, really intriguing trails. And, you know, I actually attempted the Long Trail in 2015 and blew up and failed pretty badly. But it's, you know, the Long Trail sort of being in Boston has been in my backyard and has been something that I really had wanted to take on for a while. But what I, you know, partially love about it is it just does have that history and it does have that, you know, long list of very accomplished people who've had their own incredible adventures and nail biters. And, you know, I think JB only took 46 minutes off of Cave Dog's time, which just shows you how crazy, you know, competitive and tight that record is.
Actually, it was less. It was 29 minutes.
29 minutes. Wow. Yeah. Even harder.
Right. Yeah. This is a good point here, because, you know, something's taking 5 days. You think, okay, whatever, you know, I'll go see a movie. Not quite. Like, you're scrapping for minutes on stuff like this. It's full on for day in and day out.
Yeah. It's a real wear on your body and on your mind. You know, I compare it to the Appalachian Trail, because I did that in 2017, and I've even done the Long Trail, right, in the northern section. The way that you kind of look at the Long Trail from a terrain perspective is it's a very challenging trail, but it's sort of broken up into the southern 100 miles and the northern 170 miles. The southern 100 miles is actually on the Appalachian Trail, and AT hikers, you know, affectionately refer to this section as Vermud. Because it's just regarded as pretty nasty trail, but cool because you're seeing some nice mountains, and very beautiful. But then the northern 170 miles is really where it gets rugged, and, you know, AT through hikers who turn off, really, you miss, you know, the most epic, the craziest, the most challenging terrain on that trail that really, you know, especially if you're trying to do an FKT, it just beats you up.
Beats you up indeed. This has been a theme on the Fastest Known podcast, noting that out west, Colorado and certainly California as well, all the trails were constructed by pack animals. Horses were the thing out here, to some extent, donkeys. But back east, no, wasn't any pack animals. So we have big switchbacks. People might not be aware they were constructed for pack animals. That's what they like to do. But back east, so if you want to go up Mount Mansfield or Camelback, you're going up. You're starting at the bottom. You're going straight up. And so the vert per mile is deceptive. It's much steeper than it looks when averaged out.
Yeah, it's crazy. And actually, it's kind of funny to compare. Like, the Long Trail averages about 265 vertical feet of gain per mile. So, you know, every mile you're hitting 200 on average, 265 feet per gain. Well, on the John Muir Trail, it's actually right around 200, slightly over 200. So, you know, you're looking at a 30 to 40% increase in vert per mile. And the vert that you are seeing is all rocks, roots, and, you know, just straight up, straight down, gnarly East Coast trails compared to the buffed out West.
Right. That's good. I like that metric. It's very helpful. But it's also, even that is a little undersold. Because the JMT, every step of it's runnable. Because that 200, 205 feet per mile gain is graded. It's kind of an even grade, while the 265 feet per mile on the LT, that's punchy. That could mean it's going up three times as steep as that, and then down, and then up again, and that averages out to that 265. So I think it's a hard 265.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like I was looking at my watch. I had this really nice Coros watch, which lasted almost the entire trek, which is just mind-boggling that watches can do that. But I was looking at it, and you know, after the first 10 miles, I was like, oh my god, I'm averaging about 400 feet of elevation gain per mile. I was like, that seems crazy. And so there's like two or three sections in the northern part that are like 5 miles of easy terrain, flat terrain, and which means, you know, a few of the rest of the miles are even that much harder, where it just feels like you're constantly going up or constantly going down. And there's almost no respite from that.
Right. And then there's the Vermud part. I never heard that. That's a good one. I appreciate that one. And look at who came before you on this. You still took a day off it, but your background is, of course, just massive. And the Appalachian Trail, that's a good example. I mean, you took almost a day off of Scott Jurek's time, but you did it unsupported, which means you did this whole darn thing carrying everything on your back, including the sleep system. So let's just clarify this for the listeners. Supported, in my opinion, isn't that big of a deal for anything less than a half day, even up to a day. Okay, it's helpful. But as soon as you go overnight, it's massive, because that means you're carrying a tent, maybe, or a bivy sack, whatever it might be, and a sleeping bag or bivy sack. And you need to take care of yourself every step of the way, as well as carrying the weight of the food. So we're going to get into this in a sec, but you start off going unsupported, which is your style, and you're able to do many of the big trails faster than some of the ultra runners are going supported. So let's get into that a little bit here, String Bean. This is, Peter and I have talked about this. This is one of Peter and I's common themes, has been on this podcast before. The through hikers out hike the runners once you go more than a week. Very, very interesting. So let's delve into that a little bit. I think you obviously start off with a fairly lightweight pack.
Yep. I started out with a pretty lightweight pack. My base weight was about 8 pounds. About a pound of that, 13 ounces, was me carrying rocks in memory of eight Black individuals who were murdered from police or civilian brutality. So I had, you know, a pretty lightweight pack, but then I also had about 19 pounds of food that I was carrying to get me through the entire trek. A base weight's everything minus worn weight and consumables. So it's like so like food, water. You wouldn't count fuel in that if you were carrying a canister. All my clothing didn't count in that as well.
Gotcha. So 8 pounds base weight. And that means, I'm guessing, for 5 days, you didn't cook.
Yeah, no stove. It was just straight cold food that I just kind of muscled down and ate and in a lot of ways enjoyed, because the food, you know, the food's a very fun part of it. You basically get to pick out as much as you want on something like this.
Well, kind of as much as you want. You have to have carried it.
That's true. You do have to carry it. You do feel it on your back. You know, when you're going over Jay's Peak with 26 pounds on your back, you're like, what am I doing? Like, why am I out here? But yeah, the weight definitely beat you up. You know, I'm still recovering from, I have like scabs on my back. I still have a scar on my back from an infection on the AT that I got from my pack rubbing. I even have some chafing that's still there, and some hot spots on my ribs from where my, you know, the Polanta pack that I have it doesn't have a hip belt. So it just goes straight on the weights on your shoulders. My ribs even are hurting from carrying the pack, in addition to my shoulders, in addition to my back, upper back and lower back.
Wow. Yeah. Beats you up for many, many reasons.
Yep.
And one of them I'm noting, so you had that 19 pounds of food for 2 days. That doesn't come out. for 5 days. That comes out pretty low. And you said 9,000 calories per day, but that's still not much weight per day. So I'm guessing you had to have a very high fat content here because people get confused about this. They think sugar is much higher in caloric, but as you know, it's 9 grams per ounce of 9 calories per ounce in terms of fat, and it's only 4 for carbohydrate or protein. So it's over twice as much caloric density in fat as it is in carbohydrate.
Yep, you got your stats down, Buzz. I love geeking out
Good.
about this subject. Yeah, the 9 pound per ounce in fat is hard to pass up when you're doing something like the long trail. So, I was eating a lot of nuts, banana chips, plantain chips, Oreos, Pringles. I did want to incorporate a lot of carbohydrates because carbs are certainly important, but the other culprit for weight in food is water. So trying to figure out, any food, get it in its driest form or have the least amount of water weight with it, and you're sort of maximizing, the 140 to 160 calories per ounce that you hope to average for your for the food that you're carrying.
140 to 160
Calories
calories per ounce.
not per
Good.
weight per yeah, per ounce. Yep. And then
Yeah.
I was thinking
Yeah,
per ounce. Got me
that's
for a
correct.
second.
Wow. And so a lot of nuts indeed. Wow. That's and didn't cook any of it. So you have to have a strong digestive tract to manage that.
Yeah, it was GI problems are a discussion for a different podcast maybe, but no, the worst problem I had was I had this big throat issue that so my throat got infected or something happened later on in day two, which made it just very hard to eat for the remainder of the trek. So especially nuts were really hard to eat, which was tough because I relied pretty heavily on nuts, and usually I'm used to eating a pound to a pound and a half of trail mix per day on something like this, and it's just very, very hard to do that, especially with the oils for the nuts. Like I ate an entire bag of Fritos and just like to totally love it, feel good, and then I'd try to eat, one or two nuts, and my throat would have this sort of searing pain. So I had a really hard time with that, but I figured out a little solution. I don't know if you do you cold soak, Buzz?
I have, yes.
Yes. Okay, cool. So I took the loose definition of cold soaking here. And because I was having such a hard time eating, I would literally just put water in the food and then slurp it down. So I had like an entire bag of Oreos that I was having a hard time eating. And I just knew I was in a big caloric deficit on day four. So I poured in a bunch of water, mashed it up, and then made a little, I don't know if you call it a Slurpee. And the piece de resistance was that I also had a half bag of almonds that I didn't want to eat that was already in the bag. So it was an almond Oreo slushy. And I did that multiple times with different types of foods.
Whoa, that's next level. So once again, you've one-upped me massively. Cold soaking. I've done that with quick cooking rolled oats, dried fruit works great for that. Never tried it with
Oh,
Oreos.
don't try it with Oreo. I would stick to the dried fruit. It sounds like something I want to eat right now.
Yeah, wow. Cold soaked everything. Oh, come to think of it, the only other time I've done is with ramen. When I was in Tibet, ramen's everywhere in Tibet. And sometimes you can't cook, so sometimes you cold soak those little packets of Chinese
How do you
ramen.
do you put that in a
But
plastic bag, or do you try to like yeah, you do put it in plastic.
right. Yeah, you have to have a separate bag because the bag it comes in
It would
doesn't really
not work,
work.
yeah, if I was thinking. I was just imagining that. That'd be messy.
Okay. All right, String Bean, you got me. I should have said no. I don't cold soak when you asked me that
That's
question.
true. I'm you're I It feels like I took you over to the dark side and put you in my camp with the people who cold soak Oreos, which and Fritos, and what else did I do? I did a few other yeah, the Fritos
Fritos.
were pretty good.
Wow.
Although the problem with the Fritos was I cold soaked it and I ate half of this other bag of Fritos, and then I left it, and then the next day I went to eat the same Fritos and it just tasted miserable. It was so horrendous, but I had to scarf them down anyway for the calories.
Wow. Okay. So this is how FKTs get done. I could have said, so how do FKTs get done? Well, now you're just telling us how they get done. You get scabs, you get blisters, you cold soak Fritos. It's basically point A to point B, whatever it takes. And it's relentless forward motion, right? you got to keep moving at all times. That's why you didn't cook, because that just takes time off. Some of the fast ultra runners could probably beat you per mile, might be moving faster per mile. But in the classic tortoise versus the hare comparison, you're getting a lot more miles in per day simply because you're moving a lot more per day.
Yep. Yeah. And when you look at some FKTs, it's actually pretty amazing. Like Jennifer Farr Davis and Heather Anderson, some long, long trails have been very closely contested with people who simply hike the entire time because they're putting in, you know, 18, 19 hours of hiking per day. And then you have someone, you know, somebody like Meltzer or Jurek, who's running. And when you look at their miles per day, you're like, wow, it's actually not, you know, even though you're running and you have all this aid, it's weird that the miles don't work out that well. And it just kind of goes to show how, you know, speed on long trails is very, very hard to come by. Even if you're running a good smooth section, you know, maybe at best you're averaging 4.5 miles an hour, versus, you know, a hiker's 3 miles an hour. And when you factor in some of the really tough sections, you know, that number even goes down. And when you're, so therefore when, you know, if a hiker is out 2 or 3 more hours, it can actually make up the difference or get close.
Right. Right. It's time spent moving in a forward direction. Peter Backwin and I discussed this quite a bit, and it's been on this podcast, which is after 7 days, the through hikers are better. They're faster than the best ultra runners.
Yeah, it's this weird, super weird thing. But that's why I love FKTs. You know, it kind of started in two different camps, where it started from, hey, I'm a through hiker doing the AT and hopefully I can do it faster than anyone's done before. And then you have, you know, the ultra runners of the world who are like, oh my God, you know, doing an FKT is a totally different type of adventure than a staged race or a organized race. And we're, you know, seeing those two ethoses and mindsets come into play with the self-supported and unsupported versus the supported attempts, which I just honestly love seeing because it's two incredible worlds colliding.
Good point. It is two very different worlds, because the fast runner is going to look at these numbers and they go, eh, easy, I can do this.
And I do the same thing.
And they get schooled.
Yeah, I mean, I was even looking at the long trail and I was like, man, JB's time, like 4.5 days, I think that's doable. And you know, day two on the long trail, in order to do that, I need to average 60 miles a day on the first 3 days. Day two on the long trail, I pour in a 46 mile day after, you know, 18, 19 hours on feet. And I'm like, oh yeah, no, that is not, that's not in the cards. So it's so deceptive, because, you know, some of this mileage seems so short. And people often see miles the best metric for an FKT, but really, like, you know, 46, I would almost compare that 46 mile day to like a 65 mile day on an easier section of the AT. You know, still a rough section like Pennsylvania, where you hit a lot of rocks and get some elevation, but that just relative challenge of what the trail, you know, gives to you can be so different based on the terrain.
Right. God, this is so interesting. I really enjoyed this. So let's go into two other aspects so people can learn your technique here. What was your sleep system?
My sleep system, I had a Mountain Laurel design. What is it called? Why am I? Solo bivy. I'm blanking on the name. But so basically like a very, very lightweight bivy under a pound. And then I had a poncho tarp. I got hit with a pretty big storm for a long time on day two. And so I knew the rain was coming, so I knew I needed water protection. So I had that poncho tarp. And then I had a Enlightened Equipment 40 degree quilt. And quilt's another great weight saving technique for anyone who's listening. And then I also have with my Palanta pack, it's a totally frameless bag, so you need some kind of back protection. So I have a Therm-a-Rest Z pad that I use as my back protection that I've modified. So it essentially acts as like the barrier or the internal frame for my bag. And I would sleep with that. It got down to like the high 30s. It got pretty cold actually for a few days, so I was getting a little chilly at night. But I'd, you know, daylight is another, I think, under-recognized aspect of FKTs that allow you to cover a lot more ground. I think Jeff Garmier did this in like late July, I wanted to do it in June to try to maximize sunlight. So I would run the entire day through sunlight. I'd set up camp for 15 to 30 minutes, eat as much food as I could, pass out for 2 hours from 9 to 11. I'd wake up, get out of camp by 11:15, hike until and run until 2:30, fall asleep at 3, get up at 5, and then do the whole thing over again.
Wow, I've never heard of that. So you didn't go for the one rest break, you went for multiple.
Yeah, and it was actually a last minute call too. I was talking with Anish, so Heather Anderson, and she was like, yeah, dirt naps, you know, my best friend. So sleep deprivation is a huge challenge on something like this. And I actually, you know, I did one rest break on the PCT and AT. I still think that's a good solution for the AT and PCT, but for the long trail, it worked out really well. Of just breaking up the night and helping me really focus on those night miles while still giving my body enough time to recover and be able to crank out as much as I could during the day.
But then you had to get up at 11:30 PM and get
out. And that was, the finish was crazy. Well, I don't want to ruin the finish because hopefully we'll delve into that. It was a lot of fun, but on the very last day I woke up and I sat there for 10 minutes and I was, you know, going through this weird fantasy, and Katie's my wife, we were selling like camping gear and equipment outside of my bivy on the trail. And I'm, you know, spending 10, 15 minutes in this kind of fantasy world. And then I come to and I'm like, wait a second, I'm literally 8 miles from the finish. And I spent, you know, 10, 15 minutes just kind of daydreaming about because I was just so out of it. So getting up when it's dark out like that requires a lot of willpower. Especially, you know, when it's high 30s, that was some of the harder nights on like night 2 and night 3 and where you hit really pretty cold temperatures, especially for that time of year, while you're trying to pack things up and be as efficient as possible because you just move so slowly.
Wow. Cold soaked food. And then you had a pretty good sleep system though. That sounds fairly comfortable. But then I had never heard of that sleep regimen before. And Anish, of course, I don't think there's anyone better than her at efficiency. Certainly you want to look her up on our website also. And the article that I think it was Backpacker Magazine called "A Ghost Among Us." Did you ever read that?
Yeah.
You got to read that article. But at any rate, so she's got good advice. But I had never heard of a sleep regimen like this. Good for you. But something I've always done is go in early July or late June as well, because you're faster when it's light out. That's just how it goes.
Absolutely. And you like there's just so many things that you really don't think about, like even like battery. I had a battery issue, but you know, if I had an extra 2 hours or an hour of darkness each day, then I'd have to prepare extra battery power that I wouldn't be carrying otherwise. There's just all these little things that add up. And to what you said, Buzz, like you just go slower when it's dark out.
Yeah, emotionally a lot slower. Wow, this is amazing. We'll get to your finish here in a minute, but I wanted to go through a few more logistics. So on the self-supported, on the unsupported, you're going everything, all your food from start to finish. And obviously you can't do that with water. So you're picking up water along the way. What was your filtration system?
Oh my God. Yeah, there's stories, Buzz. So I had a Sawyer Micro, so a micro filter. So basically you screw it on top of a water bottle and you can just drink straight out of it. So I screwed on the Sawyer micro filter on top of my water bottle. I had double Sawyers for the Appalachian Trail, but this is when you don't listen to the haters. Somebody at some point laughed at me for having two Sawyer minis. So I have two water bottles on the front of my pack. And that's my hydration system. So I can drink from the water bottles whenever I want. I have two different filters. So if one conks out, I have a backup. But for the long trail, I was like, it is kind of ridiculous. And you almost hit yourself in the face with these filters because they get up close to your cheek height. So I only brought one. Sure enough, day two, the O-ring, which is the thing that helps create a suction and create a vacuum for the water. So it allows you to put water pressure. So it essentially allows you to like squeeze the water bottle to get water out of it. I lost it. So I'm going over Camel's Hump at about 1 a.m. and I unscrew my water bottle to switch the Sawyer filter to go to the other water bottle because I still have those two water bottles and I just rotate the Sawyer filter. And the O-ring, which is a little piece of plastic, just falls out. And I don't notice for at least a mile or 2 miles until I go to actually drink some of the water. And what that means is instead of using kind of air pressure to get water out, you have to suck through the Sawyer because it doesn't create that suction. And the Sawyer has a very weak flow. So when you're trying to suck out of this water bottle, you're getting, you know, drops at a time. And it's just very hard to drink water. And with 3 days left in my FKT attempt, I knew I was just honestly up. I don't know if you guys bleep stuff out, but I was up Schitt's Creek basically. Because I just couldn't.
So what did you do?
You know, for a good half day or for a few hours, I ended up about an hour later, I crashed. You know, I kind of had a low point and just took a 8 mile night section, which was the shortest section I did. So I crashed at the shelter, and a few hours into the next day, I was playing with all these different things that might replace that, because it's really just a small circular piece of plastic. And I was like, if there's another small circular piece of plastic that can create a suction, then I'll solve my problem. But I have very limited resources in my backpack. Nothing worked. I got so desperate. I took a leaf off a tree, punched a hole in it, and tightened off my Sawyer around it to just see if it would work. And sure enough, a leaf solves the problem. So if you pull leaves over on themselves and you puncture a hole and you twist it just right, you can create that same vacuum using leaves. It doesn't work all. It probably worked about 70% of the time, and there were only single use items. And if you ever unscrewed it, it would remove the suction, and you'd have to replace it with a new leaf, which you do pretty often because, you know, once you squeeze a bottle, it really compresses and you have a hard time using it. So I could get maybe like a half squeeze out of a full 600 milliliter water bottle to drink from by using leaves. And I did that for the rest of the 3 days.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. I mean, this, you're going full on. Obviously, hydration is critical, and you're having trouble drinking safe water.
Yep. And there were multiple times when I honestly thought about just drinking straight out of a stream, which sounds a lot easier and better to do on the West Coast than on the East Coast. Just like, don't do it, Joe. Whatever you do, don't get Giardia, you know, a day before you're supposed to finish.
Well, with 2 days to go or a day to go, you could have done it.
That's true. I could have. Yeah. I shot you that email yesterday, which is sad. The sort of knock on my FKT was I had to accept water from a hiker. I didn't really had to accept it, actually. I just wasn't thinking. But it was that later that afternoon, actually, the day after I'd lost my O-ring, the following day, I was going up near the Lincoln Gap near the Breadloaf Mountain, and there were two hikers, and I just hit a really long section of water, of a waterless ridgeline going over Mount Abraham. And I was like a little scarred by that because I was already having a hard time drinking and I was already dehydrated in addition to this leaf issue that I had. And I met two hikers and they were very nice. And I was like, oh, are there any water sources coming up? And they're just like, oh dear God, no, there are definitely none coming up. And I, with, you know, they had extra water in their pack because they were getting off trail. And, you know, I took the devil's bait and ended up actually accepting water from them, only to realize that of course, tarnishes an unsupported FKT, making it a self-supported FKT.
Right. And you were super honest about that. So let's stay with this a minute. Just so for listeners know, by going unsupported, that means you're just on your own, but you can go into towns, you can buy food, things like that. It's just, I mean, for self-support. For unsupported, it's start to finish except for water. So for self-support, which is the classic thru-hiker style, which it's almost impossible to do the AT or the PCT without going self-supported, you going to town, you're buying food, you're shipping yourself food and picking it up at the post office. But for unsupported, no, it's start to finish everything but water. But I would like to note that I would not like to view this as being tarnished. I think you are very honest. You showed a lot of integrity and you divulged this immediately. And you're listed as self-supported on the website as opposed to unsupported. But personally, I think that's good. You did what you did and you acknowledged it. And I think it's all good, Joe.
Yeah, honestly, Buzz, it was really hard because when I first announced it, I wrote on Instagram unsupported and I didn't even think about it. And I was going through and was kind of like, well, no, if you accept water from someone, then actually that is that absolutely is accepting, you know, some kind of trail aid. The difference in trail aid, because it is nuanced, you know, is that it's not some being self-supported. There shouldn't be any kind of organized or intentional aid or support that your average through hiker or average runner wouldn't get. So it just feels, it's really sad that I, you know, that I ended up taking the water, because honestly, I don't think I needed it. But, you know, I do, it is a different kind of, you know, once you introduce outside assistance or aid, even, you know, something that is sort of a trail resource, you know, I think that absolutely should be acknowledged and mentioned. And at the end of the day, you know, it took me a few days to be like, oh man, my ego feels like hurt, because I really want the unsupported just seems so much more pure and real and what I was going for. But at the end of the day, you know, it's an awesome adventure. I absolutely loved it. And, you know, that's just what it was. And I'm very, very happy with how things played out, and, you know, wouldn't do it again. I would do it again a different way, but, you know, I'm totally happy with where things stand.
Excellent. What good description. And speaking of the description, listeners who are enjoying this as much as I am should go to the website and read your description. You have a lovely day by day and context here. So go to fastestknowntime.com, and on the homepage, it's latest FKTs. This will pop up, or click on the top menu bar routes and type in long trail, and you can read the whole history. Like we said, it's an all-star list on the long trail. Everyone has interesting stories. Or on the top menu bar, click on athletes and type in your name and see what you've done, which of course is Pacific Crest Trail, Appalachian Trail, Wicklow Round, and now this. So read up. Further reading is available on the website. And at this point, it's a nice, well, let's just finish. You know what I'm going to ask you here in a minute. We're going to come back to something, yep. But let's finish this sucker up. I mean, good grief. I mean, this is absurd. I'm getting kind of worked with this conversation. I'm getting sort of tired. I think I need to go lay down after talking with you. So you start off with cold soaking Oreos and Fritos, and you with mouth sores, and you cleverly or sorry, I'm being snide here. Not so cleverly went stupid light, as Skirka likes to say, and took only one water filter. So here you are going full on for 5 days and having trouble drinking water. And now your flashlight runs out of batteries.
Oh my God. So backing up 1 second, I had I had a rechargeable battery. So you can't accept outside battery, but I had like a Anker 100, MAH, I always forget what the term is. So like 2.5 full charges of battery left, which I was using for my phone and for my headlamp. And sure enough, day one, you know, after I finished day one, I look at my battery charge on all of my devices and I'm like, I am set for the rest of the long trail. I have more than enough battery charge to be able to make it through. Fast forward 2 days and I my headlamp dies way quicker than I expect it to. And I have very limited space left in my power bank, meaning, you know, I'm looking at the final push of the long trail, which will be at least one full overnight. And I have 34% battery left on my phone. And I don't have any battery left on my headlamp, which means I'm just going to have to be, at some point using my cell phone as my primary light source through the middle of the night. And that was a really kind of sad moment, but I was like, at the very least, I know 34%, that's going to get me a really, really long time. I'll be able to crank and hopefully cover a ton of ground. And coming in, I had about the morning of day four. So about 24 hours before I finished, I had about 70 miles left to go. And I was like, I can make it super far today. And then I'll either crash or I'll just go through the night and probably finish around like 1 to 2 a.m. And as I'm making it through the day, I then go on to bonk. So I get really lightheaded. I have a really hard time running downhill. That's when I had the Oreo slushy because I knew I was in a big caloric deficit. and it's really nice terrain. The southern section of the Long Trail, like I said, is much, it's much nicer terrain. It's, you know, there's some flat sections, it's a little more buffed out trail, but I was still covering a pretty slow pace and didn't cover as far as I wanted to. I was having a hard time even jogging downhill. So if I was running more than 30 seconds downhill, I got kind of, I started to feel bad and my heart would start racing too fast and I'd just have to stop. And so going into that night, I was like, man, I don't know if I can finish, you know, in the, before the 5 day range. You know, I was expecting to finish around 1 or 2 in the morning, which would have put me 4 hours ahead of the 5 day mark. And I was going into it and I just knew I was experiencing pretty severe sleep deprivation and I was experiencing pretty severe caloric deficit and I just needed to recharge. So I took the decision to just take an extra hour nap from 9 to 10 p.m. knowing that I would have about 16 miles to go on the Long Trail. So I'm there. I know it's so close. So at that point that's when I had 34% left on my battery. And I was like, 34%, can that get me through at least, you know, 16 miles? Okay. At the slowest pace, that's going to be 8 hours. Maybe it'll be like 6 hours. And I was like, probably not, but it'll at least get me pretty far. And whatever whatever happens, I, at the very least from 4:30 to 6:30 AM, which I started at 6:30 AM. So 6:30 AM was my finish cutoff. I was like, I know I have 2 extra hours of sunlight. So I have however long my phone will last. And then I have 2 hours of sunlight onto that for a maximum of 6 to 8 hours that I need to finish. So I decided to take that rest so I could try to maximize time because the sun went down at 9 o'clock. So I slept from 9 to 10. I woke up, turned my phone on, and all of a sudden my phone battery, as people probably are familiar with, jumps from 34% to 24%. And I'm like, oh God, I just lost a third of my phone battery by simply turning it on and turning it off. And at that point, the light kind of hit in my mind. I was like, okay, now I'm in race mode. Like I'm in like college. I ran a Boston College cross country race mode. So I turn on my iPhone flashlight and I'm like, I'm running as damn far as I can with 24% battery. And I'm using an iPhone flashlight, so it's not great light, but I'm just like, at this point, just gunning it down the trail, doing the fastest night running I've done, recklessly kind of running through things. I'm lucky I'm not on the northern section of the trail because it is quite a bit better footing. I have all my energy back that, you know, previous to my nap I've lost, and I'm just doing way more running than I'd done, in the previous day or a few days almost, sprinting down, and I go and see my phone battery go from 20%, 15%, 10%, 5%, 2%. And all of a sudden my phone battery dies. And at this point I realized like whenever my phone battery dies, there's no moon and there's no starlight and I'm in the woods, I'm literally going to have to camp wherever I land. Like there's no middle ground because I don't have any light source to show me anything. Like I'm literally going to have to, when my phone dies,
you're going to come to a dead stop.
Dead stop. Yeah. So, and I have this realization, my phone then dies and I'm like, well, at least from what it seems like, I'm on a really nice piece of trail. And then I look at my phone and it's like, there's 1% left and my phone's still on. And I realize the iPhones have an automatic flashlight disable feature at both 1% and 2%. So there were two times when my phone goes off and I thought I'm sleeping where I'm at, but I get another, 20, 30 minutes of running on that one and last 2%. And at that point I'm just flying because I can like feel the finish. I'm still pretty far away, but every second that I get is going to get me closer to that finish line. All of a sudden it stops and I look around me and I'm literally just in the middle of this lake and I'm on this sketchy boardwalk that's about 200 feet long and I'm smack dab in the middle of it. And the boardwalk are two rotting, 2x4 pieces of wood that have been put next to each other. And it's so dark that I can't even use the starlight to see where the boardwalk is. And the only thing I have left is 4% on my watch. So my GoPro. I use the back LED of my GoPro and turn it on and record in order to see where the drop-off spots for the planks are and have to navigate by GoPro LED for about 100 feet to be able to get to solid ground to pass out at about 2:30 AM.
Okay. Okay. So I take back everything I said about you being a perfect guide for Andrew Skurky adventures.
I know, it's instilling a lot of confidence in people, I'm sure.
Right, right. So we're not putting this on your bio on the guide page of Andrew Skurko Adventures, but it does go on fastestknowntime.com. So if people want to get more of the scoop here, just go to the description that you wrote on our website. But Joe, that was just crazy. That's bringing it down to the wire. I bet you thought not only a second Sawyer filter would have been helpful, but you probably thought that a Petzl E-Lite, which weighs like 1 ounce, might have been helpful too.
Would have definitely helped me out in a pinch. And the bad part about it too is which I failed to mention, I guess, is my headlamp actually turned on. There's an auto lock feature, which I just didn't even think about, but I sleep with my headlamp right next to me so that it stays warm so that it gets exposed to less cold temperatures. And in my sleep, I actually turned on my headlamp, which drained a few hours of battery, which was sort of the difference there between night and day, literally finish.
Wow. Okay. Well, this is serious. You got it done. You came in 1 day under Legends time. This is startling. But going back to this weight, you know, the Sawyer extra filter, the extra battery or extra headlamp, do you saw your toothbrushes in half?
I did. I snapped it. So I didn't take a saw to it, but I did snap. Yep.
Okay. All right.
I cut off all my tags, clothing tags.
Right. And you carried 13 ounces of rocks. So this is good. This really got my attention here. We're going to delve into this, and I really want to talk about this, Joe, because I was super impressed. So we just went through this incredible scene. You have this amazing background of the biggest trails. You set a new FKT on the Long Trail this year. But during this time, you carried 13 rocks and a sawed in half, a broken in half toothbrush. So what's up?
Yep. No, it was a really important part of the journey for me. So with all the national protests that were sort of sparked by George Floyd, it was weird because Katie and I left Boston. The day we left Boston, there was, you know, the first Boston protest, with the Black Lives Matter movement and with racial equality and the fight for racial equality and justice in the U.S. really sparked and changed. And it felt really weird because we were going to New Hampshire, and we were just in this kind of remote area of New Hampshire going on hikes, enjoying life. Meanwhile, you know, there's people getting tear gassed. There's, you know, all these acknowledgement of different kind of mistreatments and really ridiculous, you know, dichotomies of people's daily experience based on color in our society. And it like, and I'm really glad I have Katie, because she, you sort of like need people to talk about these things with. And she, you know, initially took a real lot of interest in all the news that was happening, in really educating herself on this matter. And we just started to talk about it. And the more I thought about it, the more it's just kind of like, you know, going off on the Long Trail to set an FKT in a lot of ways feels like the ultimate kind of white privilege. And also it's a very white industry and sport, right? Like if you look at people who've set FKTs, it's very white. If you look at like the outdoor industry, if you look at Vermont as a state, which I thought was really interesting, like Vermont's one of the least diverse states in the US. And it's not something that really gets talked about. People often acknowledge that, yes, there aren't a lot of, you know, voices from people of color. There's not a lot of like outdoor leadership or role models. They definitely exist, but it's not something that really gets talked about or brought to the forefront that much. I seriously question, like, is this the right time to do an FKT with everything going on? And the more Katie and I talked about it, and I talked with a great friend, Yassine Du Bois, who's in a New York Times article, which I'd recommend anyone to read. And the more I talked about it, the more I realized it's like, we need to be taking this movement that's happening. It's hopefully changing how people are treated in our cities, and also acknowledging that and recognizing that, and also celebrating that in our trails and in our trailheads. So you know, carrying eight rocks of, you know, names like Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd. It was really significant to me. I wrote their first names on each of the different rocks, and do recognize there's a lot more than eight people that you know have been killed from police or civilian brutalities. But hopefully it does a little bit in acknowledging and also bringing light to the fact that our outdoor spaces need to be inclusive. And, you know, for me, the long trail FKTs, like I talked a lot about how hard it is on this podcast, but like, honestly, Buzz, like I'm having a blast out there. Like it's a place where I go to celebrate, to have joy, to experience healing. I love our outdoors. And, you know, my entire hike, I saw one African-American person and they were just a day hiker, which to me, you know, even recognized a little bit further that this kind of, you know, this accessibility to our outdoors needs to be fought for and needs to have a voice. And I shouldn't be the voice that people are listening to or looking up to, but I want to help create that conversation and create that movement. Cause, you know, frankly, I've had people who've reached out to me and bluntly say, like, can't we just keep it to hiking? Can't we just keep it to running? Like, you know, people aren't racist in the outdoors. What are you talking about? This is a ridiculous topic to even consider. And I think that's part of the conversation that needs to happen. In addition to, you know, myself and other people needing to continue to educate themselves and to listen. And the rocks to me, you know, is the ultimate form of a weight penalty, of the ultimate thing that I spend hours trying to fine tune, which ultimately, you know, for me is the easiest and one of the most powerful ways I can recognize some of those challenges and difficulties and acknowledge that through what I'm doing.
Extremely impressive. I think that's amazing. So you snap your toothbrush in your half and yet carried 13 and a half ounces of rocks, eight rocks painted with the names of Black people who were killed by police. And I like what you wrote as a reminder that we all must bear this weight. And you did that literally. I think that's, I'm impressed. I think that's fantastic. You started a fundraiser for Outdoor Afro. What's the number? How much money have you raised so far now?
We're getting close to 8,000, which is really cool. So you can donate through outdoorafro.com or through a Facebook fundraiser. Maybe you could link to that, Buzz. Would that be
okay? Yeah. We're going to do okay. That. So listeners should definitely go to the show notes because we're going to have a link to this project that Joe has started. He's up to $8,000 of donations. So we should get that over 10, just the folks listening to this right now. Heck, so yeah. That's fantastic. We're going to have a photo of these rocks that you took with these eight peoples. These are just people. I mean, they just were killed. Like you said, you're out there hanging it out on the long trail, but that's a lot more fun than getting shot. So I think this is a perfect thing to roll in. It's all part of it. And something that came to me, Joe, and you're writing this, I think is very right on. We're not experts. We're not authorities. We don't really know that much. We're just saying, hey, this is something to look at. And something you said really impressed me, which is when the people who do not think they are affected start saying this must stop, that's when change happens. So if you leave it up to someone else, change is going to be difficult. So I think this is something that we all should take part in.
Yeah, I think that's a great message, Buzz.
Well, it's your message. So.
Our message, yeah. Well, no, okay. I mean, the other thing too that I didn't mention, so Outdoor Afro, what I particularly like about them and a quick plug on them is they basically help organize events and workshops and community to help inspire and educate specifically people, you know, Black people or African Americans, to try to inspire them to be in the outdoors. So they have things like hashtag Black Birder Week for people who enjoy, you know, bird watching. They have meetups, they have educational events. And when you think about, you know, accessibility to the outdoors, that's for me, in thinking about this a lot, you know, what I hope continues to move forward is the outdoors can be intimidating and it can be scary. And, you know, when I'm doing the long trail, I don't ever worry about someone making a racist comment or someone who might be carrying a gun and could be threatening. And so we all need to kind of work and be vigilant and realize that, you know, even our outdoor spaces are affected by you know, the systemic racism that has existed in the US and creates different realities for different people.
Everyone needs to go to the written show notes, get links to Joe's site, read his trip report, which is really good, and definitely look at the link we're going to provide for Outdoor Afro, because we want to get this number over $10,000. That's easy. We should easily be able to do that. I should note that just a few days ago, 2 days ago, Corey Woltering set a new FKT in the Ice Age Trail.
Oh, he finished. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, he came down to the wires at 2. He was working at it at the end, but he got it done. And it was interesting because, you know, he's a fast guy. He's kind of the opposite of you, if you don't mind me saying that. You know, I'm just saying his marathon PR is significantly faster than yours or mine. Let's just put it that way. So I hope you get him on the podcast, and you can look that up on the website as well. But we'll wind up with you, as we always do. What's next? Here you are, this 29 years old, moved back to your hometown of Seattle, lovely wife. What are you going to do next?
We will see, Buzz. A tough, tough, tall order. My initial goal with this summer was, I actually was really trying to nail down specifics on the JMT. So that has kind of changed a little bit with everything going on, but that is where my gaze has continued to go back to. So I'm hoping there might be, especially with UTMB being canceled, I'm hoping there might be a little second magic this summer, but, you know, it depends on how I recover, and it depends on my schedule. And at the end of the day, it's the trail. So if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But, you know, that's certainly something I'm hoping to put my hat into the ring for.
Ah, well, that's a good heads up. We might be talking with you again.
Potentially. Or I might be, you know, sideways in a ditch vomiting after a miserable day and a half, where I go too hard. Who knows? But that's, you know, that's part of the fun.
Part of the fun. Type 2 fun sometimes. As always, a delight talking with you. You're an inspiration in many different ways. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Buzz. Thanks for having me on.